This is the Bloody Good Podcast, where we discuss the mysterious, the unknown, and unsolved. Are you ready?
Hey everybody, and welcome back to a Bloody Good Podcast. I'm your host, Brianna Wilson. So guys, we are officially on episode 8, which means that a Bloody Good Podcast is about 2 months old now. And, you know, I must say, so far, so good. A little bit of hiccups in the beginning, especially as far as, like, scheduling and being consistent. And shame on me, I still have not updated the blog, but I will. I'm getting to it, I promise. Okay, so, yeah, we still have a really good lineup planned out for you guys. And we have about 5 more episodes left for season 1. Also, don't forget that you can always send us any topic recommendations to abloodygoodpodcast@gmail.com. Even though we have a schedule of the content that we want to put out, if you have a recommendation, suggestion, something that you're wanting to hear and learn about, you can always let us know. It's no problem to rearrange things, okay? So with that being said, let's go ahead and dive in. So today we will be talking about Amelia Dyer, aka the Angel Maker, who murdered infants in her care over a 20 to 30 year period in Victorian Britain. She is suspected of having killed 300 to 400 children in total. So she has killed a lot of babies, okay? So as always, let's get started with the details of her childhood. Amelia was born in 1836 in Bristol, England. She was the youngest of 5 siblings born to Samuel and Sarah Hobley. Now, during her childhood, her mother was plagued by a mental illness that was caused by typhus. And if you're unfamiliar with typhus like I was, it's basically like a bacterial disease that spread throughout like contaminated food and water. You can get it from being bitten by mites, lice, ticks, and rat fleas, things like that. And supposedly, as the fever caused by typhus reached Sarah's brain, she became increasingly more violent, which resulted in her beating her children almost daily. Now, some other sources suspected that since mental illness wasn't well understood back then, that it could have more likely been schizophrenia than typhus, but right now they're calling it typhus, okay? So Amelia was the one who was given responsibility of caring for her mother, which was really no easy task as she was the one who suffered the bulk of her mother's wrath when she did have these fits of violence. And apparently this caused Amelia to start dipping into depression, which was then further amplified by the deaths of 2 of her sisters, one in 1841 and the other in 1845. But I really couldn't find any information regarding like what the sisters died from, and even the ages of the sisters when they died was a little suspect because the age wasn't like adding up if Amelia was supposed to be the youngest, so I just wasn't sure, okay? But then Amelia's mother, Sarah, would then eventually succumb to her illness in 1848. So there was a death in 1841, 1845, and then 1848. So 3 deaths in less than 10 years, okay? Now, after Amelia's mother's death, she actually ended up living with an aunt and then served an apprenticeship with a corset maker. Now, at this point, life was actually going pretty good for Amelia. You know, nothing super significant. But then her father died in 1859, and her eldest brother inherited the family shoe business. In 1861, Amelia then became estranged from at least one of her other brothers and then decided to move. So there were only 5 of them. 2 of them passed away. 1 took on the family business, and then I guess the other is the one that she kind of estranged from, so she decided to move. This is when she met and married George Thomas, who was 59 at the time, while she was only 24. Both of them ended up lying about their ages on the marriage certificate in order to reduce the age gap. George deducted about 11 years from his age, and then Amelia added 6 to hers. So his fake age was like 48, and her fake age was like 30. Which, I mean, I guess that sounds better, but that's still a pretty big age gap. That's still like 18 years, even with them faking it. But anyways, after she married George, she trained as a nurse and a midwife. During her training, she met another midwife named Ellen Dane, who is the one who introduced Amelia to the world of baby farming. Ellen would use her home to provide lodgings for young women who had conceived illegitimately and then farm off the babies for adoption or allow them to die of neglect and malnutrition. However, briefly after sharing her side of the world with Amelia, she then had to flee to the United States to escape the attention of the authorities. So let's talk more about this baby farming and how it actually became like a thing. So apparently, unmarried mothers in Victorian England were struggling to establish consistent income after the 1834 Poor Law Amendment Act had removed any financial obligation from the fathers of illegitimate children. So if you had a baby with a man and you were not married to this man, this law said that he had no financial obligation to you or the child. A lot of the time, people who had children out of wedlock were seen as loose or prostitutes or something like that. And so it didn't help that in the UK, single parenthood and illegitimacy at this time was heavily stigmatized. So this is what ended up leading to the practice of baby farming. Essentially, individuals would act as adoption or fostering agents in return for regular payments or a single upfront fee from the baby's mothers. And since many mothers were left without other good alternatives, they truly thought that this would be the best thing that they could do for their child. They thought that they were putting their child into good hands. Unfortunately, the children were often mistreated and in some cases even killed. And the follow-up of trying to check on their children was also really difficult. They didn't really want to get involved. Police had a hard time tracking down these babies anyway, so it was just kind of like a big mess when it came to that type of stuff. So how did Amelia get involved in baby farming? Why did she feel like this was the outlet that she needed to take? So after having her first child, Ellen Thomas, she decided to leave the field of nursing. In 1869, her husband died, and Amelia became desperate for income. So that same year, she began advertising in local papers, and one of her ads stated, "Married couple with no family would adopt healthy child, nice home, terms 10 euros." So essentially, she lied, stating that she was married, she had a good home, an effort to try to attract women to bring their babies. On a side note, I find it rather interesting, like how frequent people in her life died. I mean, her mother, her two sisters, her father, and then her first husband. That's crazy. So anyways, along with new mothers, these ads also attracted women who were like in advanced stages of pregnancies who relied on Amelia's expertise as a midwife to deliver and then immediately smother the infant, making the murder appear to be a stillbirth. Now, at this time, Victorian coroners were unable to distinguish the difference between like a suffocation and a stillbirth. So it was really an effective method to rid of unwanted children. Now, when Amelia first started, she actually ran a legitimate business where she properly cared for the children as they should be. However, she ended up taking in more infants than she could actually manage, which then led her to her grand plan of getting rid of the children. This also allowed her to pocket most, if not all, of her earnings. Her typical method of killing was either through strangulation, starvation, or the administration of alcohol or opiates, a popular syrup containing opium that was used not only by her, but other baby farmers as well, was called Godfrey's Cordial, aka Mother's Friend. And for each child she would kill, she would actually have a doctor come in, certify the death, and issue a death certificate, which I find interesting because, like, it was almost as if she was trying to do it the right way by getting a death certificate. But this is what led to her first conviction in 1879, as the doctor that she was calling out to certify all these deaths became suspicious about the number of child deaths that he had been called in to certify. From this conviction, she was only sentenced to 6 months in a labor camp with a charge of neglect. However, the 6 months must have been hell because it was really all it took to destroy Amelia's mentality. Apparently, after she was released from the labor camp, she tried to go back into baby farming, but it was a little rocky in the beginning because she had spells and mental hospitals due to her alleged mental instability. Amelia also began abusing alcohol and opioids, and at one point she drank 2 bottles of laudanum in a serious suicide attempt. But due to her long-term abuse, her tolerance to opium products was like super high, so of course she survived. Now, after her little run in and out of mental hospitals, she did return officially back to baby farming. But this time, she realized how foolish it was to call in a doctor after she murdered all these babies. So she began disposing the bodies herself. She would either toss the bodies in the Thames River or bury them in gardens of like her rented lodgings, because as we'll find out later, she was moving quite a bit. Surprisingly, Amelia did remarry in 1872 to a William Dyer, and that's where she gets her last name from, Amelia Dyer, who she ended up having 2 kids with. One was named Mary Ann, also known as Polly, and the other was William Samuel. Amelia did eventually leave her husband, but apparently her daughter Polly wasn't able to escape the abuse from her mother, who often acted in violence towards her. Per Polly's account, she said she heard voices and she had a delusion that I was going to murder her. She threatened my life on several occasions, and once she attempted it. When Polly grew up, she would actually go on to marry a man named Arthur Palmer and then become a baby farmer as well, kind of following in the footsteps of her mother. Now, to escape suspicion, Amelia and her family frequently relocated to either a different town or a different city altogether and used a number of aliases. Now, in the beginning of her baby farming career, she would accept like weekly payments from the mothers. However, as time went on, she found it best to only accept full adoption in exchange for 1 lucrative payment. Even though she did make some exceptions to this, that was like her preferred method of payment, 1 grand lump sum for a full adoption. And this allowed her to quickly murder and dispose of the bodies. Some sources say that Amelia killed the babies within even just a few hours of receiving the babies in some cases. So that's crazy. I mean, literally getting the baby from the mother, getting money in hand, saying bye-bye, your son, your daughter's in good hands, and then you're already plotting on how you're going to kill them. That's just crazy. So let's talk about how Amelia was finally caught. On the morning of March 30th, 1896, a bargeman navigating the Thames River near the town of Reading pulled up a small package wrapped in brown paper from the shallows. It held the corpse of a baby girl wrapped in flannel, and the baby was later identified as Helena Fry. She had white dressmaker's tape that was tightly bound around her neck, and her eyes were bulging out. And so this is what led to the initial suspicion that she was murdered. Now, unfortunately, finding an infant's corpse was nothing like terribly unusual in Britain at this time. Reportedly, there were like hundreds of babies' bodies found each year. Some were thought to be stillborn, and others were victims of like neglect or violence. But the sad part was that there was really no way of finding out like who they were, where they came from, or how they actually died. Luckily, Amelia got a little sloppy and didn't catch that some writing was left on the packaging that she used to wrap up the baby with. And even though the writing was a little smudged because it'd been in water, they were able to make it out to say, Mrs. Thomas, 26 Pigott's Road, Lower Caversham, Reading. So it had a name and an address. This finding eventually led to Amelia's home. Now remember, Amelia liked to use aliases, and her first husband was a Thomas, George Thomas. And so Mrs. Thomas is an alias that she decided to go by. Probably not the smartest idea, especially since there was a connection there, but that's what she did. After putting surveillance on her house and also setting her up with a decoy and all this stuff, they eventually were able to raid Amelia's home. Now, when they raided Amelia's home, they were overcome immediately with the stench of human remains, even though they didn't find any bodies. The smell of death was apparently super strong. They found receipts for baby wanted ads, health and adoption records, and pawn tickets for children's clothes. And this led authorities to order an immediate dragging operation that was watched by crowds of onlookers that were lining the riverbanks. When the body count rose to 50, Amelia was like, oh no, I did not do all that, and basically told the police, you'll know all mine by the tape around their necks. Pretty much saying, like, look, I'm not going down for all that. I only killed so many and put them in that river, you know? So 7 of the babies ended up having tape around their necks, and 2 of the babies that were found were a Doris Marmon and a Harry Simmons, who were actually stacked together into a carpet bag along with bricks for added weight. Now, some of the papers that were found in Dyer's home is actually what helped police find one of the mothers, Evelina Marmon, who was a British bartender who then identified the girl baby in the carpet bag as her daughter. In a lineup, she pointed out Amelia and stated, "That's the dreadful woman to who I handed Doris." On April 4th, 1896, Amelia was arrested for murder, and her son-in-law, Arthur, and daughter, Polly, was charged as an accessory. Amelia's case drew national attention due to the high number of deaths that were revealed by the dragging of the river and the amount of time that Dyer was able to avoid conviction. Remember, this was going on for a period of 20 to 30 years. Dyer officially went to trial on May 22nd of 1896, but it was just for one murder, that of Doris Marmon. Now, before the trial even started, Amelia had confessed through a couple of letters. In a letter to her son-in-law, she wrote, "My poor dear Arthur, oh how my heart aches for you and my dear Polly, and I am sending this to tell you I have eased my mind and I have made a full statement. I have told them the truth, and nothing but the whole truth, as I hope to be forgiven. God Almighty is my judge, and I dare not go into his presence with a lie. I do hope and pray God will forgive me. I had a letter from Polly. She is coming down. You will have a lawyer, but for myself, it is only throwing money away. I know I have done this awful thing, and I know that I alone shall have to answer for it. I have just wrote a long letter to Willie, another to Father. Also, I have wrote out a true and faithful statement of everything. I hope God will give you both grace and strength to bear this awful trial. God bless you, my dear boy, your broken-hearted mother, A. Dyer." So based on Amelia's confession, Arthur Palmer was then discharged, and then later, Polly was dropped of all charges. So one of the letters that Amelia wrote on April 16th, 1896 read, "Sir, will you kindly grant me the favor of presenting this to the magistrates on the Saturday, the 18th instant? I have made this statement out, for I may not have the opportunity. Then I must relieve my mind, I do know, and I feel my days are numbered on this earth, but I do feel it is an awful thing drawing innocent people into trouble. I do know I shall have to answer before my Maker in heaven for the awful crimes I have committed. But as God Almighty is my judge in heaven and on earth, Neither my daughter Mary Ann Palmer nor my husband Alfred Ernest Palmer, I do most solemnly declare, neither of them had anything at all to do with it. They never knew I contemplated doing such a wicked thing until it was too late. I am speaking the truth and nothing but the truth, as I hope to be forgiven. I myself, and I alone, must stand before the Maker in heaven to give an answer for it all. Witness my hand, Amelia Dyer. And so, despite her confessions, Amelia tried to use insanity as her defense per her lawyer's recommendation, trying to bring up, you know, the numerous admissions to the mental hospital and things like that. However, when it was all said and done, it took the jury less than 5 minutes to declare her sane, guilty, and worthy of the ultimate penalty, execution by hanging. So Amelia spent her last days writing a voluminous account of all her crimes, and on Wednesday, June 10th, 1896, just before 9 a.m., Amelia Dyer was hanged at the age of 60, with her last words being, "I have nothing to say." So yeah, that's the story behind Amelia Dyer. And her case and outcome actually sparked this revolution in adoption laws, pushing authorities to police baby farms, basically like an attempt to end abuse. But, you know, unfortunately, despite this and the scrutinizing of newspaper ads that was basically used as a tool to connect the baby farmers with the mothers, the abuse didn't stop. But yeah, so that's all I have for you guys. Definitely let me know your thoughts about Amelia Dyer and her heinous crimes and all the poor innocent babies that she murdered. I mean, 300 to 400 suspected deaths over a period of 20 to 30 years. Now let's do the math real quick. So let's just use 30 for argument's sake. But if we divided 400 by 30, that would mean that she was killing about 13 babies a year. Now, I personally think that number is too small, because that would put her at killing at least maybe one baby a month, which was probably not the case. She was probably killing more than just one baby a month. Even the evidence of her having two babies packed in the same bag is evidence that she was killing more than one baby at a time. So I would say her death count is probably even higher than that. But I don't know. Like I said, you guys let me know your thoughts. Subscribe if you haven't already. And as I always say, thanks again for joining me on A Bloody Good Podcast.